Hello, everyone, and welcome to Hit and Hustle from irishsportsdaily.com. I am your host, Greg Flamong, and with me, as always, is Jamie Uwayama, Mr. Jamie University. It is Thursday, February 15th, and we're going to do some hot takes, Hot Take Thursday, and we've got some fun ones for everyone today. We're talking about Drew Aller. Jamie thinks that college football is going to split in two, some on the 2025 recruiting. I've got some thoughts on the Notre Dame offensive line in 2024, so it's going to be a fun show for some hot takes. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If this is your first time catching us, please subscribe to this channel. Please hit the like button. Please hit the notification bell. So whatever it is, we are going live. Links to this podcast are in the description below. Terry Tyler is here. Thank you for being here, Terry. Jason Smith is here. Thank you for being here. Jason Drunk Vigo, among my guy. Thank you for being here. DV, you're always here, and we appreciate your support for this this channel. Jamie, did you see that the EA trailer come out for NCAA football? Do you see that?
I did. Yeah. Unfortunately, like, I know all these people are hyped about it, but man, I just haven't played video games in so long. I'm not going to be one of these guys who plays it. I mean, great that it's back. That's awesome. But I don't got time for video games anymore. But like, I loved it. I was addicted to it when I played when I was playing it. And I think that was kind of like the end of my thing when it ended, really. It was like, yeah, it was one of my one excuse to keep playing. I would love to. Hopefully my like nephew will get into it or something. So then I'll maybe play with him or whatever. But that would be awesome. I would maybe do it just to kind of, he lives on the other side of the country, so that would be kind of cool to kind of just maybe play online against him. But other than that, like, it's cool. I'm excited for everybody. I'm excited for all, especially young kids playing it. But other than that, for me personally, it's not like, it's cool, but not like super, super hype.
It honestly, like, it almost makes me sad because I can't participate in it the same way. Because I'm in the same boat as you. Like, I played it all through college, out of college. And then when it went away, it was like, I haven't, like, gone back and, like, looked at when exactly I stopped watching video games. But it was probably around the same time. I loved it. I loved the game. And I was actually thinking of so I've talked about it a couple times. I'm coaching my daughter's. She's 9. I coach her and her friends in flag football this year. So we're doing flag, and maybe into the fall we'll do it as well if the season starts up in the fall. And I kind of want them all to like get the video game and play, because it's a great way to learn like the game strategy, like it really is beneficial. And my son he's like, when we go places, other people have video games and he'll play there. We don't have any consoles at our house. But it might be a good way to kind of get him into the game, because the thing about football is it's kind of hard to understand. It's kind of hard to explain, like the concept of downs, first and 10, second and 5, like all the
special
like,
teams.
What does this mean? Like, why are they kicking? Like, oh, I have 3 downs. Well, why do they kick? What do they kick for? Like, why do they do all that? So it's a good way to learn. So I guess I'm excited about that. I mean, but my big fear is like, it's a great way for me to get in trouble too. Cause if it's in the house, I will play it. Like, I will. There's no way that I won't. And my wife, she there's no way she's going to tolerate that. Like, I just know like that's not going to be a good thing. So, but it is fun, and I know a lot of people are excited, so that's very cool to see. And Jamie, there was another bit of big news that came out about the NCAA, that they're going to make big changes to the NCAA tournament and the college football play. Was the college football playoff involved in that as well? I couldn't like decipher. I know like they wanted to make changes to the NCAA tournament. Basically, they wanted to add teams to the 64, the 68 that are already in it, and they wanted to do more. But then I think they wanted to make changes to the college football playoff too.
I don't think they have any control over that.
Then yeah, it's so people with just jobs to do that don't need to be done. Like, they're just thinking of ways to change things for the sake of change things, right? Like, it just kind of let things be what they are, you know, like improve the current thing, not trying to totally change it. But I guess that's going down a different rabbit hole there. Jamie, you has an amazing poker face.
This is, I mean, I guess it's a common theme.
What is
that? This is who else didn't Coach Humph say I had an amazing poker?
Oh yeah. Someone said last show, you didn't like smile very much. I was like, you gotta just know Jamie. You gotta get him going. So, Tommy Reese, everyone thought that he was going to be just a couple of news items right off the top. People thought that Tommy Reese was going to be the UCLA head coach. They went with Deshaun Foster, who's someone I know very well. He came out right when I was in high school. Big Tustin guy. He's big kind of UCLA royalty out here. He was a big Tustin running back. He had a great college career. And so he's going to be UCLA's coach. Tommy Reese stays. Chip Kelly off to Ohio State. What did you think of that move, Jamie? Chip Kelly moving on to the Ohio State University to be offensive coordinator.
Well, I mean, I believe I wrote about it in Six Thoughts last week. Like, it's one of those things where people are making such a big deal about, like, oh man, these college coaches, like, can't believe he's going to, man, this is wild. It's like, he was going to get fired. Like, it's just, he's like a lame duck coach. So he just was going to take a job to get, you know, he's going to take his next job. Like, he just, there was really no point in him, like, kind of sticking it out. And then the other thing is, like, the parts about being a head coach in college football or just being a head coach, yeah, just that part of it, he didn't want anything to do with it, which was like, it just makes sense for him to be just like, I'm just going to be an offense. I mean, he's probably not going to have to do any recruiting, you know, like he'll be like the guy who's like, okay, you're getting the quarterback. So he's just going to, you know, he's going to have a relationship with that guy, that one guy in the class, and that's it. And that's all he'll have to do. And it's like, good for him. You know, he'll just be able to just kind of do that. I do think, like, man, what a huge upgrade from, you know, Chip Kelly from BOB. You know, yeah. Bill O'Brien was.
Yeah.
And it's not like Bill O'Brien did a bad job at Alabama. Certainly did a good job. But if I'm looking at who's, like, kind of the best suited for the college game and especially the run game, and then he's reuniting with, gosh, I'm forgetting his name now. Their offensive line coach, who was you know, UCLA's offensive line coach, Ryan Day, is obviously was like a former Chip Kelly assistant. Like he played for Chip Kelly, I believe. So there's a lot of DNA there that it makes sense that, like, these guys are going to work great together. And if you watch UCLA, like, their offense, like, it's fun. It's still like, and it's different than what he did at Oregon. And man, I think they could really unlock some stuff. They're going to be really tough to stop. Like, it's actually, like, really a great thing that Notre Dame isn't playing them this year, because I think they're going to be even though I don't think, like, Will Howard is, you know, great, but just with all their other weapons and stuff, like, and what they had at UCLA too, they didn't have a great O-line and still, like, ran the ball just whenever they wanted, basically. And I think that's the thing, is that he can just win with scheme, and just, he's a really, really bright guy. And I think it's going to be fun. It's going to be interesting to watch. It's the one kind of move that, if there was like a assistant coach move out there that really, like, kind of can kind of flip, like, you know, what you would think. Like, I think all the guys are bringing back, they're already probably up there, and like, it's them in Georgia. But I just think it's like, I mean, I would even put them as the favorites over Georgia right now to win the Natty.
It is interesting, like, the fit at Ohio State, in terms of just, like, it will be different than what they've been doing. And sometimes, like, a school has kind of an identity, I guess, for lack of a better way to put it. Like, they just have – so changing that can be difficult. But he is like he does some really good things, like the running game, his offensive line stuff. I know that the his O-line coach was his O-line coach at UCLA, so that kind of that'll work out really well for them. So, but he is you know, best suited for, you know, I think offensive coordinator. Like he doesn't want to do all the bells and whistles things that you have to do with being a head coach. Like he just wants to call plays and design plays and coach and do things of that nature.
Meet alumni groups and stuff.
He doesn't want to do that. But speaking of best suits, best suited, best fit. And if you got to go meet alumni groups, what you want to do is you want to get a good fit and you want to get a good suit. And what you can do for that is you can go to esqclothing.com, which is founded by Notre Dame alum Ga Wang. You've seen ESQ and all your favorite Notre Dame players and coaches with over a decade of making the best custom clothing available. ESQ will help you look and feel your best, get you into a right fit, from a perfect fitting suit or sport coat, shirt or bomber jacket, or that perfect tuxedo for wedding season. Check out Ga's amazing work at esqclothing.com and book an appointment to upgrade your wardrobe today. Mention ISD and get 10% off your entire purchase. Notre Dame coaches have no problem getting suited up to meet alumni and to all those sponsorship deals. All right, Jamie, let's get into hot takes. Let's get into the hot takes here. Where do we want to start? Well, I'll start off. I talked about it on the Twitter machine and kind of, you know, promoting this show. And there was a lot of talk in the 2022 recruiting cycle. Tommy Rees dropped the bag. Whether it was true or not, people said it. People believe it today. Tommy Rees dropped the bag. Didn't go hard enough after Drew Aller. Went in on Steve Angeli and he blew it. Tommy Rees blew it, Jamie. That's what everyone said. And I got to tell you, I think he got this one right. And it's not so much that, like, there's not obviously a ton of evidence on Steve Angeli. There's a good amount of evidence on Steve Angeli. He's a good football player, right? Good player. But there is mounting evidence that Drew Aller maybe isn't all that, right? And you know what? There's a little bit of Phil Dracovic-ness there, too, as well, in terms of just, like, his numbers, right? So let's go look at his numbers at Penn State last year. First full year as a starter. 60% passer, 2,600 yards. Okay, now look, touchdowns to interceptions, very good. Okay, you can't take that away from him. 25 touchdowns, 2 interceptions for Aller. Okay, that's fine. Okay, that's good. But you know who else had a really good touchdown to interception ratio in his first full season as starter? Phil Dracovic with Boston College. I think it was something like 17-5, something like that. This was during the COVID year, so the numbers were a little bit lower. Didn't throw a ton of picks. But, like, look at him in the big games, Jamie. Against Ohio State, 18 of 43. That's not going to get it done. You're sitting there at 4.4 yards per attempt for 191 yards. That's not going to work. Against Michigan, 10 of 23 for 70 yards. 70 yards and 23 attempts. That's a bad running game, Jamie. As a running back, you don't want to do that stuff. Let alone as a quarterback, 3 yards. Now look, in those two games, right? No interceptions. One touchdown against Ohio State. One touchdown against Michigan. So you're not throwing picks. But like, that's not going to get it done.
He was
that's
bad in those games. Anyone who's watched those games, he was not good.
It's not good. You got an average depth of target of 8, right? 12 big time throws. I looked it up, Jamie. In 2022, Drew Pine had 16 big time throws. In less attempts.
Yeah.
He had less big time throws than Drew Pine did.
No one's confusing the arm talent.
Exactly. So it's like, you know what? And no one would confuse the arm talent for Phil Dracovic either. So like, that's where I'm coming from. It's like, you know what? There's a ton of everyone talks about the upside there. There was just no upside last year from him. And I think Steve Angeli might have a little bit more upside, right? Showed a little bit more, Jamie. What do you think about this?
So Drunk Vigo. So big time throws, those are from PFF. That's a stat they keep.
Yeah. Right?
So that's why they're, so it's not just like a, us just being like, that was a big time throw, whatever. No, it's like,
yeah, yeah, no, it's not me. There's yeah. They keep stats on it.
They keep stats on it. And so, I mean, I think right now you'd have to say, for not just how they played on the field, but just for the reasons that, you know, of like who is on the team and where he's beat. Like, I feel like Drew Aller would have been out, you know, at Notre Dame right now. Like,
yeah.
He would have left.
Yeah.
So there's that goes into it too. And okay. So I guess this is probably because PFF had him in the top 10 returning quarterbacks, which I think they got a lot of heat for it. Deservedly so. PFF, I just got another just random thing. PFF, top 101 players that they listed. And Jack Kaiser is like in the top 60. He didn't start for Notre Dame. I mean, I understand that he graded out well for them. But, you know, don't just take your numbers and just do it. Like, there's no one who would say, like, Jack Kaiser, definitely better than J.D. Bertrand. Like, no, that's just not a thing that was there. So PFF, valuable tool, not dissing the tools that they have, but like the guys doing the rankings.
You don't want to take your counting stats or your grades and then extrapolate the grades from like this guy is actually better than that guy.
Yeah.
It's like, no, like, don't do that. Like, that's not good. Right. Cause you can have a guy who is like, this guy isn't graded very high, but like,
he's,
look at him. He's a good player. Right. So, you can't.
So like, like,
that's Xavier, how you get Jack Kaiser.
Xavier Watts was 101.
He's a defensive player of the year.
Just no one who watched Notre Dame would say that Jack Kaiser was a better player than Xavier Watts in the defense last year.
Right.
Notre Dame. So it's just, that's insane. But yeah, so they had him eighth and I read their thing on him and they said, okay, we know this is going to be controversial. And they mentioned the drops. There's a lot of drops from the receivers, you know? Okay. Sure. What I'll say with him is that they did him a disservice on how they ran the offense. Like if you watched him in high school, and the reason he's got like these great tools, he has very like Josh Allen. There's a reason that was like the comp because he's this big guy with a big arm who can run. He could really run and he could be like a weapon in the running game, but they didn't use him in the running game, which is also insane when you consider like, okay, maybe you don't want to play against Rutgers and use him in the running game, but you're playing Michigan and Ohio State. It's time to unleash him, you know? Yeah. And I think one of the reasons that Josh Allen has been successful in the NFL is that they kind of leaned into his strengths and he obviously got better at some of the things that he wasn't as good at, but still, he still leaned into his value as a runner is still, you know, critical to what makes him one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. And to not use that with Aller is stupid. It's just dumb. So they got Andy Kotelnicki, you know, from Kansas. He's the new offense coordinator there. Obviously, they did like a lot of stuff at Kansas with like quarterback run game. I could easily see him having like a big bounce back year if they use him that right way, instead of trying to force him into something that he's not. But I mean, as of right now, it's just I don't even know if it's like that much of an argument really that you would say like specifically for Notre Dame on what we've seen and just the fact that I think how it would have probably played out that it wasn't the right move to take Angeli.
Yeah. Only 98 designed rushing yards for Drew Aller last year. Which, again, like that's less than Sam Hartman. That might, honestly, that might be less than Drew Pine, to be honest with you. I'd have to look it up. That's probably not true, actually. But it's definitely less than Sam Hartman, though. And so it's like if you're using Sam Hartman more as a runner than you are Drew Aller, then you are doing it wrong, right? That you shouldn't do that. So that's something that's a take that I have. I just think like there was so much debate about that, and like Tommy Rees got so much heat for that, and just like the way that all played out, might have worked out okay for Notre Dame there. Jamie, which one do you want to go to? Do you want to go to recruits, 2025 recruits, early enrollees? Where do you want to go with this?
Yeah, let's go. Well, let's go to the early enrollees first, actually.
Okay.
So,
all right, here we go. Four early enrollees, big contributors. Yeah.
So last year, obviously, you know, it's like a thing now that like every year now you're going to get like double digit early enrollees. That's how it works. Like players, especially if you're big time recruits and you know you're a big time recruit, the plan is you're thinking of this years ahead to get and be an early enrollee, right? So to do everything you got to do. And, you know, most of the guys who are going to Notre Dame too, who were, you know, generally better students than a lot of other schools, you know, they're doing all they can to get in, right? To get into Notre Dame early. So, you know, they had double digit guys last year, but there's only three guys that ended up contributing. It was Greathouse, Jaden Greathouse, Rico Flores, and Christian Gray, right? And I think that, you know, that was, and really too, like, where I would say Greathouse, I think he would have played, he would have been a guy who played no matter what. And maybe Flores too. And Gray was just obviously just too good not to play. Like that was the kind of deal with him. But obviously the receiver situation played a lot into how much Flores and Greathouse played. I just think this year you're going to see more guys at early enrollees play. And I would say there's going to be at least four that play. So here's the list of early enrollees for all the people that don't know. There's 16 of them, by the way, a lot, you know, 16 of the 23 in the class. So CJ Carr, Kingston Viliamuasa, Cam Williams, Bryce Young, Kedron Young, Styles Prescott, Aeneas Williams, Jack Larson, Logan Thomas, Micah Gilbert, Peter Jones, Leonard Moore, Sean Saviano, Anthony Knapp, Cole Mullins, and Kennedy Urlacher. So most of those guys aren't going to play. Like, that's just how it is. It's not having, you know, just because you enroll early doesn't mean you're going to play as a freshman. That is definitely a thing that I think everyone kind of knows now. So most of those guys won't play, but I think there are going to be, I mean, some of these guys, I think like a guy like KVA is going to be, one, there's opportunity. Two, I think he's a guy who's probably too good to not play. I think like Bryce Young is going to play this year and contribute. Kedron Young is someone that I think is going to play this year. I think, will Aeneas Williams play this year and contribute? Maybe, I don't know, but he's capable. I think that's it's possible, right? And there's certainly some other guys that I think like you wouldn't put at the top of the list. So like Benjamin Morrison, I thought could have, even though he wasn't early enrollee, but I liked him. I thought, man, this guy's more advanced than I thought. And then right away in camp, when you saw him, you're like, okay, this guy can play. There may be guys this year that come in there. So like maybe Cam Williams might be too talented to play, but maybe Micah Gilbert just comes in and you're like, I mean, oh, wow. He's like somebody like, so there's a bunch of those types of guys too, that could happen. And I just think that it'll be, I just think there's going to be more this year. So there's going to be more kind of freshman contributors. Obviously there's some guys who come in the summer and play. And for, I mean, there was like a string of guys where like Mayer, Hamilton, you know, Morrison, those guys were all summer guys who came in and they were just too darn good to not play. So that can happen too, but I do think that there's more early enrollees this year who are going to actually play. So that is going to make kind of spring more fun, because you're going to see guys who this spring who are kind of in the mix, and you're going to be like, it's not just seeing them and getting a preview of them for you know, way ahead down the line. It's going to be like, oh, we're going to see some of this fall.
Rajon's asking, do you, when you say play, do you mean like use up a year? So they're going to be, they're going to play more than the four games in the regular season.
Or contribute. Like they're going to be guys like who like
are you count actually, on them every single week in part of the game plan kind of thing.
Yeah. And maybe not, you know, some weeks, maybe not like against Texas A&M, you're not going to see the some of these guys play right away because it's like a bigger game, whatever. But I think as the year goes on, it's just like you see it with freshmen kind of grow as the season goes on. And I think if you look at like, say, Christian Gray, where he was obviously playing and not redshirting, but where say during the year, all of a sudden, Benjamin Morrison's hurt for the Pitt game and he's got to play a ton. And you're like, oh, he's good. So it's like that kind of thing, right? Where these guys are going to play, you know, like say Bryce Young, you know, be in the rotation. Not like maybe not every single game he's going to get a ton of run. Maybe there's some games where he plays like four plays or whatever. But I think he's going to be a guy who, you know, plays over 150 snaps or something like that. Like I think that is going to happen. And I just see it with a lot of these guys who are like Kedron Young, you know, just like Jeremiah Love last year, right? Like that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Like I think Christian Gray's, like he's tough because he would have played so much more. Like they put him in games, like every game they put him in and took snaps away from Ben Morrison, probably with the exception of Ohio State because Marvin Harrison Jr.
Yeah,
and that's totally different. But like everyone, every other game, they're taking Ben Morrison off the field in order to play Christian Gray. Like when you're doing that. Like, you think you got something, you know, like he's tough. Like Jeremiah Love obviously like fits into this perfectly, right? Like he was a huge part of the Ohio State game plan, played in every game, right? They always wanted to get him work in every game. And that's another one where like they had so many bodies too, and you still try to fit him in, something like that. Who is like, okay, so I think both of us are pretty, like I'll put Kedron Young in this. Like I think he's going to be one, right? I think we both think that KVA will be one, right? Where do you see, just if you had to guess right now, like where do you see, just say, you know, these are the next two who you think are going to be part of this group?
I mean, I would say Cam Williams and Bryce Young would be the other ones. So,
Bryce Young at big end.
Yeah, just because – I think there's a little bit of uncertainty there in terms of who's going to play behind RJ Oben. And I don't know how healthy Cabrera is. I don't know if I think maybe they're going to move Burnham there, kind of slide him over. And I just think Young is just going to be a guy that physically they're like, this guy's not staying here. You also have to look at it from the perspective of like, there's zero chance this guy's ever going to stay 5 years.
Yeah.
So
there's no value to the,
there's no value. So it's like he's very talented. What are you talking about? Drunk Vigo, man, you're a weird dude. He's too talented to not try to get him ready.
Yeah.
To play. Right. So that's the way I kind of see it with him. And I think it's the same thing with Cam Williams, right? Where you should get someone who's that talented and does need this work to get, you know, to where he needs to be. But it's a little bit like, Golden Tate, where you're like, I mean, that was obviously a not a great situation what they had at receiver there, but also you're like, this guy's just good. We just need to get him on the field somehow and just find a way.
I mean, it's kind of like Chris Brown in 2012 where, you know, everyone remembers the one catch against Oklahoma, but they tried to get him the ball against Michigan State. They tried to get him the ball against Michigan. They were trying all year to kind of get him out there
earlier in that game too. Yeah.
Exactly. So this could be something there for Cam. It'll be interesting. I do think, especially like now that it's so far now in kind of ingrained in like the culture of college football now. Like you said, 16 early enrollees. like it's over half the class, right? So like it lends itself to like, if anyone's going to do it, it's going to be these guys. And now more kids are, they're coming in, oh, you know, to college older, right? So they're almost like sophomore age, even though they're technically freshmen as they enter. So they're more physically ready. I think someone brought that up in the chat about how guys are just, here Jason Smith made the point here, like way more guys coming to Notre Dame as early enrollee and freshmen that are physically ready. And I think that's kind of a big part of this, is that they're physically ready to go, and they can get them out there and get rolling for the Notre Dame team in 2024. All right, I'm going to go with my next one. It kind of flies in the face of the way we recruited the units, but I do think the 2024 offensive line will be viewed as better than the 2023 offensive line. And the reason that I think this is so, and for me, it makes sense in that I didn't think, like, if I'm ranking the units, if I'm being honest and I'm being objective, like I do have to put them last because they have the most questions, and they have some guys like Pat Coogan and Rocco Spindler. Not so much Aston Craig, but like inside, like they didn't have, when they played poorly last year, it was because inside they didn't play well. Let's put it like that. Yeah. And the two best parts of that, Blake Fisher and Joe Alt, are gone, right? So you figure, how can you lose them and be perceived as better? And I just think that, I think Mike Denbrock can put them in situations where are more advantageous to them. So that's one thing. He's done very well at that throughout his career, wherever he's been, right? He's been able to maximize the offensive line. So I think that plays a big part in it. And I also think that, like, Aston Craig, I think him a year after, like, getting his feet wet, and the same thing with Billy Shrout, and even the same thing with, like, Pat Coogan and Rocco Spindler to a degree. Like, they got their feet wet in college football. And maybe it was, like, a little bit, like, Aston Craig, Billy Shrout, maybe it was a little bit early and now it isn't, right? Maybe even Pat Coogan, it was a little bit early, right? But you still got your feet wet. And I think that makes a big difference. I think the tackle situation is the one that really is kind of the wild card here for me. But I do think that if they stick with Jagusaw and they stick with Tosh Baker, If Jagusaw and Baker work out, and let's say it never gets to Wagner, I think it can be okay the way that kind of like they were okay on the inside last year. They could do things there. Like maybe they keep a tight end in there. You know, like maybe they do things to where it's like maybe they're not technically better, right? But they'll be viewed as better because maybe their numbers will be better. The way that they kind of play in games will be better, right? Like it doesn't really – like. It doesn't matter how it is person to person. It's how the unit as a whole plays. And it kind of got to the point last year where inside, it didn't really matter how good Joe Alt was. It didn't really matter how Blake Fisher was. The inside wasn't ready to go. So I think the whole unit can be stronger than the individual pieces on that unit. And so given all those factors, I think that 2024, like I think people will end the year being like, you know what? That line was better. Like they were, and I think the metrics might bear that out as well. What do you think, Jamie?
First of all, I love this hot take. I just love it. And I was thinking this kind of in this direction too. And it's because of like, when, you know, when I was talking about it with Mike on Power Hour, where someone asked a question of like, why was Notre Dame so bad on the road? Right.
Yeah.
And honestly, just my thoughts of it, it's not like, man, they really didn't do a good job of like preparing for the noise or preparing for this or whatever. It's like those inside guys weren't good enough. And they just, and your O-line is at a disadvantage, you know, comparatively, you know, because of being on a silent count and all that kind of stuff on the road. And they played good, you know, interior defensive linemen, and they got ate up. They just weren't good enough. They weren't good enough. And I really think that they're going to be better inside this year. I mean, I do think there is a big Chance are going to miss Alt and Fisher in you know, certainly in certain situations. And I would worry about, like, if Notre Dame's in situations where they have to pass to win the game. And I'm like, can these guys protect? You know, we got to see it. These tackles, we got to see it, right? But I just think if you go back and look at just say like the pressure numbers that those guys gave up in the game, like Spindler and Kuya and Corral in those games, or just look at, you know, just straight up lowlights, like yeah. of guys just getting blown up and just the play just getting destroyed before it could even get going. So much of that happened for Notre Dame on the road with those guys that I just don't think you're going to see nearly as much of that this year. And it might even just be like, say, if Coogan and Spindler are starting, they're just better, right? And that just that could happen. But like, I just think that that's going to make a massive difference. It's going to make a massive difference because even in the Oregon State game, where I didn't think that, like, the O-line, they didn't play great in that game. I wouldn't say, like, there wasn't anyone that I was like, man, this guy really, like, had an awesome game. Yeah. And obviously, you know, they didn't have Alton Fisher, right? But they kind of did enough to help them do what they need to do. And I think they'll be better than that this year. And I just think that I love this hot take. I love it. I love it. And I don't think it's crazy that it could happen. So I really, really like this one.
I think if people rank their units before last year too, safety's last for a lot of people. You know? And defensive player of the year, you know, like you don't know how, like, it can, like, a year after, like, and this is, you know, we made the point like a couple of times about second year with the offensive line coach for the first time in a long time, right? They went from Quinn to Heastand to Rudolph, right? None of these guys have had the same guy for a year after. Like, so the benefit the defense got of having the same defensive coordinator a year after, like, those guys made a big jump. And I think the safeties were a big part of that, right? And so that's why, and the linebackers as well, like, it all kind of worked out for them. And I think that can make, like, that's kind of an X factor there. You know, Rajon brings up a point. It's like, a lot will depend on Leonard's pocket awareness. Yeah. Like, it's going to depend on, like, kind of a lot of things. Like, I'm assuming, like, the assumption that I'm making here for this to work is, like, Billy Shrouth does make a jump and Ashton Craig does make a jump and Spindler and Coogan also make jumps while, like, Charles Jagusaw, like, he develops, like, you
gets would better want, throughout right? the year and all
right that, right yeah. It depends on so much, right? Mike Denbrock being able to kind of mitigate the weaknesses of the line, right? Like, it's there's a lot of ifs, right? But I do think that those things are going to happen, like, I do. And so, like, kind of that's where I'm at. And I think that a lot of people are kind of worried about the line. And it's not that I'm say that they're wrong. They're not, right? There's a lot to be concerned about. I just think it's going to work out. I just think there's a lot of factors at play that will lend to a better situation than I think that people kind of see right now. All right, Jamie, let's do the college football.
Okay.
Let's do the college football one because that's kind of a fun one. So you go. Within the next 3 years, college football will split. I didn't really know how to put it, but you explain it.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think it's always – I think everybody already knows it's already trending this way, right, where the haves and the have-nots in college football are already – it's been going this direction for a long, long time. And then obviously with realignment, specifically like – what's happened with the Big Ten and the SEC, with the SEC adding Oklahoma yeah. and Texas, and then with Oregon and Washington and USC and UCLA joining the Big and the Pac-12 dying. It's just like, you know, what we knew before, it's just crumbling. And the Big 12 still exists, but it's like a mid-major now. You know what I mean? Like, it's not even the with the schools they picked up, and it's not like Utah is not a good program. They are a good program year after year. But, you know, you're not – Utah's can't be the bell cow of your conference, you know? And really, I would say, like, they like – the Big 12 kind of needs Utah to be good every year. Like, that's where they're at. They need TCU to be good every year. Like, all these things. And even if you win the Big 12, it's like winning the A-10 in college basketball. Like, it's not the same as winning one of those major conferences. And I think with the ACC too, the ACC is not good. It's not good. It hasn't been good for years, and obviously it's very top heavy, and even the top teams haven't been as good. And so even if you look at, like, Florida State went 13-0 last year, and they were a good team. I'm not saying that they weren't a good team, but I don't know if they would have went undefeated if they played in a tougher conference, because they just, you know, they didn't have to play too many tough games last year. Like, they beat LSU with their crappy defense at the beginning, but they, you know, obviously Jaden Daniels is an awesome offense, and Clemson obviously wasn't great last year. And, like, there's none of these other teams. Like, there's a lot of bad teams. There's a lot of bad in the ACC, and those teams aren't getting better. And that's why, like, Notre Dame is, like, taking guys from these teams. Yeah. Right. And that's kind of like what's happening. And then I think you look at what is happening with the group of five, right, and all those schools, and obviously, like, those teams are, like, fighting to get in the Big 12 or fighting to get in the ACC or just trying to get, you know, there to get some kind of relevance. But, you know, those other teams that are, like, still left behind, well, what's going to happen to them? Because it's like there's no reason for some of these other conferences to add more of those teams. It's not going to help them. So, and then when you look at, like, the MAC, and you look at, you know, what's happening with the coaches. So Sean Elliott with Georgia State, they're in the middle of spring practice. He left to become a position coach. And I'm not even saying that was a bad move for him career-wise, because it probably was. I think he's going to South Carolina to be the tight ends coach. I'm not even saying that's, like, a bad move for him career-wise, but I mean, the fact that he did it at this time just shows it's like he doesn't see a future there. And I can't blame him, because in the last two transfer cycles, he lost 11 guys to Power 5 programs. So it's like, that's the core of your team, really, right? And so you're losing your best players, or most of your best players, to that. And that's the same thing with, like, MAC teams. Look at all these guys that Texas A&M added, where they added, like, a ton of guys that are, like, from the Mountain West and the MAC and all that. And that's where it's heading. And I'm not even saying that's a bad thing. It's a good thing for those players to be able to jump up and all that kind of stuff, especially because coaches are doing it too.
Right.
But you see these coaches that, like, you know, Kane Womack, Maurice Linguist, they were, you know, FBS head coaches, leave for assistant jobs at Alabama, right? Sean Lewis last year, right? Left to become an OC at Colorado. Chip Kelly, right? Obviously, there's different circumstances with Chip Kelly because of, like, he was a lame duck coach and whatever. But still, like, I mean, you could make a real argument that Ohio State offense coordinator is a better job than UCLA head coach, right? Because there is that gap between them, and they're still in the same, and they're in the same conference, right? Yeah. And UCLA isn't like Indiana; it's better than that, and can be better than that. But still, that's just where, just where it is. And UCLA will be involved in whatever the next iteration of this split, but there's going to be a split. And I just think it's going to happen fast, because there's just more of these lower level teams are getting their rosters pilfered, and guys are jumping to the higher levels. Mm-hmm. You know, there was the whole thing with the ESPN signed that long, they signed the extension for the thing. And it was like, with the language of the contract, it was like, whatever happens, whatever. It was like, yeah, all the murkiness. It's like, yeah, because that is going to happen. Like, that is going to, it's going to split. And it's just inevitable. And there's just going to be a point where it's like, why should we, why do we have to include these people? They, I mean, they really, and they've already kind of like taken away, and they don't really include them that much, but it's like, why do they need to include them in the playoff again? Like, why do we need to do this? And it just, it doesn't really, it doesn't make sense for them to do it, especially financially. It's like, why are we giving them our money when we could just get all the money? Like that, and that's how the world works. Unfortunately, that's just how it is. And obviously Notre Dame is going to be a part of that group, that whatever, you know, they'll be on the good side of the split. And I don't even know if like the Big Ten and SEC will, like, those will probably, those conferences will probably still exist outside of football. And my guess is there'll be like some kind of like different, I don't even know, they'll call it something else, but it's just inevitable that there is going to be like the NFL. It's going to be that in college football. And I think it's happening with the next 3 years, just because there's too much stuff that has happened even outside of the realignment, in terms of like these coaches just being realizing like, why am I even taking this job? Like, I'm out, I'm just going to take a position job somewhere else, or I'm just going to lose players anyways. And these players just being like, why am I here? Cause if I want to be compete with the best, I'm going to do that. And it's not to say that those programs, like some of these, I could see definitely some of these programs is dropping football for sure. I can see that happening. But I also just think they might just have like their own little separate thing and just have to be kind of fine with it, because it's just like, it's just inevitable of where it's going. Like, there's no reason why, even if the SEC and the Big wanted to split right now, outside of them just like bringing in Notre Dame, they really don't have to bring in anybody else. They don't even have to bring in Clemson.
They do not. Like, someone will get Notre Dame, but like they don't need to. You know what I mean? Like, they don't need to. I guess they don't need to plan for that, because if the split did happen, Notre Dame would have to jump on board. So it's like, they would do that. They definitely don't. The point you made about Chip, you don't think of it because it, you don't think of UCLA being a Big Ten team, but like, a Big Ten head coach leaving to be another Big Ten offensive coordinator, like that in itself is an insane concept. Like, just the thought of that. But you're right. Like, it is a better, it might be a better job, right? It just in terms of, you're getting probably similar money, and you're getting playing for a higher level. You know, you're at a higher level. You're going to be playing for, you know, championships all the time. You're definitely going to be in the playoffs all the time, which isn't the case at UCLA. So that is better, right? And so it's just, I mean, you have to be right, just given like how everything is evolving, right? Like, trying to, like, they're always trying, like, they're never stopping, you know what I mean? They're never just going to be like, you know what, we like the way it is, we're good, we're not going to do anything else, right? Like, they are going to keep going. If we've learned anything in the last 20 years of like following college football or any sport, it's that they are just going to continue to evolve in some kind of way for the sake of evolving, right? And that's just how it's been. So you just, like, you're probably right. I mean, you just have to plan for that. And you always got to be evolving. You always got to be moving, whether it's your conference, whether it's your website, Jamie, your social media page, your highlight reel for your high school highlight reel. You want to propose to someone, you got to get a good video. You got to get a good thing. You got to get the best thing. And if you want to do that, go to VSRMediaCompany.com, which is founded by Notre Dame football pregame host and Emmy Award-winning anchor Vahid Saadrazadeh. VSR Media provides professional and cinematic video and photo. Whether you're looking for a collegiate or pro-level highlight reel, have a personal story to tell, or are aiming to diversify and grow your business, VSR Media specializes in short and long form video storytelling, social media management, and website design. VSR Media also captures professional headshots, senior and sports photos. Contact them at vsrmediacompany.com. Mention Irish Sports Daily to receive 20% off your first project. Visit them online or give them a call at 574-800-9106. Ga is in the chat. Yes, we did talk about the college football video game right at the top of the show. So, Ga, you could rewind this. You could wait for us to finish, and then you could rewind it and listen to our wonderful takes about the video game and how our wives are going to yell at us for playing it too much. Okay, I actually thought of one, Jamie, as you were talking, because you're talking about changes and you're talking about schedules and how everything. My hot take, the NCAA needs a national committee to create schedules, okay? We have these people who are coming up with all these machinations of the playoffs, just sitting around, need something to do. Create a committee to create a national schedule for college football that is equitable, that is fair, because it just, to me, it's like a huge scandal in the sport that, like, there is just so much schedule inequity. It just can't happen. Like, it just should not be this way, right? We need to get rid of the notion that, like, teams should be undefeated. That doesn't need to be the case, obviously, right? Chiefs just won the Super Bowl. No one says, oh, they weren't deserving. No one says that, right? They were 11-6, okay? And I'm not saying that I need, like, a six-loss NCAA champion, because, A, that wouldn't happen. But, B, like, you get my point. Like, it shouldn't be a thing where it's like, oh, you're 10-2, you're done. Like, it shouldn't be that way, and it doesn't need to be that way, especially with the way the sport is moving. Okay, it doesn't need to be like that. Like, you look at Michigan, like, they never leave their state. They never leave their region. They played two games in November that were worth anything. Everything else was just kind of nothing, right? And even Notre Dame this year, Jamie. Two MAC schools, two service academies, right? And I don't want to get into the whole, debate about whether you like the schedule or anything else. I'm just saying, like, there's no way, should Notre Dame go 12-0, that their schedule is equitable with, like, anything that's going on in the Big Ten, with anything that's going on in the SEC. It just isn't, right? No. And that shouldn't be the case in college football. Stop letting these conferences schedule their own games. They're manufacturing playoff spots.
Yeah,
it's a big problem. And it needs to go away in the sport. Go for it.
First of all, I think this is, man, this is long overdue. And it's also, too, why the split is, it makes sense for these teams that are in the tougher conferences to just say, like, well, we're doing this. So, like, why are we doing it when these other teams are just playing? Like, why does the Big 12 get an automatic bid? Why are they going to be the third seed? Your fourth seed or whatever,
right?
When it's like, congrats on beating UCF, like, which is like, you know, they're a fine team, but they're not that good. Like, so, I mean, so I wrote about it in Six Thoughts this week, how, like, Notre Dame's schedule, they have no business not winning at least 11 games this year. They just don't. They got to win 11 games at least. And it's not to say they can't trip up along the way, but it's just like, it's easily the friendliest schedule that they've had in the longest time, because they go through all of these. They don't have the same thing last year where they had those four games in a row that were, like, extremely tough, like, where it was four night games and you're playing all these teams that were finished in the F plus top 26. Like, that doesn't happen. So this year, this is just for the SP Plus, their preseason projects. So Bill Connolly, ESPN, used to be SB Nation, comes up with this SP Plus preseason projections. It's based off returning production and all this other stuff that goes into it, right? That where he has his ratings, right? And so Notre Dame plays A&M first. They're ranked 13th. Then they play 93rd, 86, 53rd. Then they play Louisville at 24. So they have three games, easier games, before they end up playing the 24th ranked team, Louisville. Then they have a bye. Then they have 94 Stanford, 60 Georgia Tech, 104 Navy. Then a bye again. And, you know, they finish off the season. They got a decent little stretch here where they play Florida State, which is 12. Who knows if they're going to be as good as that or whatever. But then they have Virginia, 81, Army, 98, USC, 23rd. But through that thing, if you look at all of that list and where they're at, they play only four teams. The four teams that are in the top 25, but those are the only four teams in the top 45 that they play, right? USC this year has a seven-week stretch of games without a bye where they play all top 45 teams. USC this year, every single team on their schedule except for Utah State. So 11 of their 12 opponents are in the top 20 or the top 45. That is not even close to an equitable schedule to compare to what Notre Dame is playing this year. And I know people like to say obviously I'm not in one of these conspiracy theories that like Notre Dame plays, because Notre Dame typically plays, this is the one of the easiest schedules that they've had on paper heading into a season in a long time. They usually have a much, much tougher schedule than this. And it just kind of worked out this way because, like, you know, they basically replaced Army with, instead of playing Miami and all
this. The other part is, like, the ground moved under their feet. Like, they made this schedule a couple years ago, at least. And there was no big – USC was not in the Big Ten a couple years ago. Like, they weren't going to be. So, this year, I don't want to get on Notre Dame for this specifically.
No, it's not. Whatever.
Yeah, it couldn't have happened with them knowing.
It's almost like luck that it happened.
Exactly. Yeah. But going forward, like, that's what I'm saying. Like, it needs to happen. Like, college football, it's a huge kind of I can't think of the word. Like, it's a black marker. It's a blind spot. It's a blind spot in the sport that is like this. That there are teams like Notre Dame, like you said. I'm not going to blame them for this, but you better, like, you better not anything worse than 11-1. Like, you cannot. You must go 11-1, 12-0 with this schedule compared to all the other programs that are around you. Like, by the time USC could be a good football team and be 7-6-5 by the time they get to Notre Dame, or 8-3 or whatever it is, right? And like, that's the thing. Like, Notre Dame, they could be 8-3 and a lot better than Notre Dame because of the way that their schedule is set up. That's my point that I'm making.
Yeah, no, I think that is absolutely correct, because they're just, you know, Michigan's path, and I know they had the tougher end of the season, but up until that point, it was a joke, right? It was a joke.
Yeah.
And it just shouldn't happen. There shouldn't be it. It's the same reason why, like, you know, you want to get rid of divisions within conferences too, because it's like, well, the SEC East is just a lot worse than the SEC West. And it's like, well, why is it fair that these teams it doesn't make any sense. Right. So you got to have something where it's like, you know, and that's one of the things with, like, you could say with the NFL scheduling is that they have a thing where it's like, depending on your record the previous year, you know, first place in this thing plays first place in, you know, you don't get to play the last place schedule. Like, the team who finished the worst, they get the easier schedule for the next year based on the previous record, even though teams change, whatever. So it's supposed to kind of make it easier for you when you're doing it, kind of help you out a bit. And there just should be more to that. Also, there should be more of, like, planning of, like, wow, this game should happen here. Instead of having, like, five marquee games that are all night games in the same week. Like, you just, that's just bad for the sport. It's not good for the sport because all of a sudden people aren't watching, you know, Notre Dame, USC, because they're watching Ohio State, Penn State, when it's like, why are they on the same week? You know, it's like they should be different. And it's just like the competing interests of it too doesn't make sense. So, yeah, I really like this idea.
Thank you, Jamie. Thank you very much. We'll end it there. We left one on the cutting room floor, but we will call back to that. We'll do a lot of hot takes throughout the offseason. It's a fun show for us to do. So thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If this is your first time catching us, please hit the like. Please hit subscribe. Please hit the notification bell so you know whenever it is we are going live. Links to this show are in the description below on a podcast. So check us out there. Have a good weekend, everyone. We'll talk to you soon. We'll be back on Tuesday. Keep hitting and hustling.